proudly student and listener-supported community radio. CIUT 89.5 FM, the sound of your city.
Good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be talking about the Bill 21, I guess is what it's called. I don't know. The issue is Quebec's, whether it has the power, right, et cetera, to use the notwithstanding clause when it has legislation that needs to be passed and to suit the population of Quebec. It has gotten a lot of attention, this subject. There's a kind of a twist in it. We're going to be talking to David Jacobs, Toronto lawyer. We spoke to him last week. We're going to be, I think, relying on the same source. A professor passed away, Michael Mandel, wonderful individual, great writer. And he had a lot to say on the this subject. I think we're joined by David Jacobs now. Are you there, David?
I am. Good morning.
Thank you very much for talking to us because, again, we're going to be citing Professor Michael Mandel, who wrote rather important essays and books on the subjects. Last week we talked to you about international law and war, and oddly enough, this week there is this issue that's been in the Canadian media, causes a lot of interest and concern, and it turns out Michael Mandel has written on the subject of this, the charter and the notwithstanding clause, so we want to ask you about that. But actually, first of all, I want to mention that there's been the nominee. Avi Lewis has become the leader of the NDP, and that is a very dramatic development, in my opinion. And I want to know what your thoughts are based on his speech, because it seems like we may have a new tack taken for once by a federal party on major issues. You saw his acceptance speech. What did you make of it?
I hope I'm correctly quoting him, but he is talking about turning the corner for the NDP, the NDP, which has really been driven into the hinterlands in the last few years, and for many people became a kind of pale version of the Liberals. But what Avi Lewis is standing for is more robust socialist-type politics. I mean, in the final speech given by Don Davies, who was the interim leader of the NDP, mm-hmm. he mentioned the word socialism, a word which had been basically banned from party discourse for the last two or three decades, at least. Mm-hmm. So that comes back. And by the way, Don Davies also said this is a party which condemns the illegal attack on Iran, condemns genocide in Gaza, and so on. Again, words we really hadn't heard, not in those terms, from previous NDP leaders. And Avi Lewis went on to say the same sort of things. You know, he is an environmentalist. He was there with people like David Suzuki and, of course, his wife and a well-known internationally known writer, Naomi Klein, but he also spoke about the Canada should have no part whatsoever in the illegal attack on Iran by the United States and Israel, was critical of Israel's genocide, and spoke these words confidently. And won overwhelmingly, that's the other thing which is really important. I mean, he got 35,000 votes. I think the next competitor who was a sitting MP, Ed McPherson, got something like 20,000 votes, and then the others got a very small amount of votes. So not only did he win, but he won on the first ballot. Mm-hmm. And he's been quite strong and, frankly, stronger as he's moved forward. So hopefully, as he says, the NDB comeback has begun. And he did it graciously, praised Heather McPherson, but the words he used was he praised her for her leadership in the House denouncing the genocide in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And I think for progressives in Canada, for workers and people supporting working class movements and wanting to move away from Trumpism and imperialism, mm-hmm. This is a good and very, very welcome development.
So he was he and Davies both used the word socialism, did they? Or one of them did? Or what? How did they phrase that? Everybody's waiting to know if they're going to say they are socialists.
Well, Davies uses the term democratic socialism. I'm not sure. I'd have to look back over his speech
And on Iran, he condemned the illegal. How did he phrase that exactly?
You're testing me. I can't remember the exact words, but he, as I recall it anyway, said that Canada shouldn't be involved in the illegal attack on Iran. Mm. He did say that workers will always be the heart of the NDP. It was the one and only original Workers' Party. Mm-hmm. I suppose that people are going to quibble with that. But it's good to identify the party as the Workers' Party.
That's quite a step. And thank you very much for summarizing it. I think people will be excited to have a federal leader who's going to be talking directly to this subject of permitting Israel and the United States to do as they please without any actual objection or sharp objection or differentiation. On this matter of the all the attention, of course, it comes under the rubric, I guess, it's Bill 21, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and but the subject, the core of it, is does Quebec have the right to invoke the notwithstanding clause? And there's been a trend, and certainly in the media, to say, well, we've had enough of this. I mean, everybody and his brother now wants to use it. So we have to put a stop to it. It's time for the Ottawa to stand up for the whole country, blah, blah. Can you explain why this is such a sensitive matter and frame it, I suppose, in the way that Michael Mandel explained it, why this is such a sharp issue and it needs to be understood? Could you talk about that?
Well, Michael Mandel has written a stupendously good book, and it's over 500 pages long, called The Charter of Rights and the Legalization of Politics in Canada. But he reminds us of some things. So under the British parliamentary system, Parliament is supreme. Britain doesn't have a written constitution as the United States does and as we now do since the enactment of the Charter. And he points out, of course, that the whole idea of parliamentary sovereignty was developed in Britain following the great, the glorious revolution, I suppose, of Oliver Cromwell to get rid of undemocratic power of the monarchy. The evolution of the United States was quite different, and there was a lot of struggles in the United States through the United States Revolution in the enactment of the Constitution. And it's, of course, arguable that Constitution was enacted to truncate democratic rule and to allow such things as slavery and so on. Alexander Hamilton was one of the principals who didn't like the idea of property owners having their property put at peril by Democratic votes. So the idea of having an overall constitution, it's not that there were bad things entirely in the constitution, but the idea of having an overall constitution was, in one sense, there to protect the rights of property owners. And the problem we have is that so parliamentary sovereignty obtained as the main principle, that is, the people decide on the laws. It's not that things can't be challenged in courts, but people decide what the law is going to be. Mm-hmm. And there are certain restrictions that we've had for quite a long time, such as human rights codes. And it needs to be pointed out here that Quebec was the first place in Canada to enact human rights codes, where you can challenge such things as the oppression of women, minorities, ill treatments, and so on, and seek accommodations and so on. So the problematic is that the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, although lauded as something very democratic and so on, it didn't give us anything we already didn't have in certain terms. We already had, and everyone recognized we had, at least on paper, the rights to freedom of speech, the rights to freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, and so on. Mm. But the context in which the Charter of Rights and Freedoms was enacted was a context which involved a contest with Quebec and under the leadership of Pierre Trudeau. Quebec had a rising sovereignty movement. The people of Quebec were concerned about the erosion of their rights, including their right to speak and work in French. I mean, it's legendary that if you were a postal worker in Quebec, in order to work, you had to take instructions from an English foreman speaking in English, a language which you may not speak and may not be familiar with. Mm-hmm. So language rights were very fundamental to Quebec's sense of itself and sense of itself as a nation and sense of its subordinate position. Mm-hmm. And so there were various attempts over a long period of history to try to ameliorate the problems between Quebec and English Canada. One of them was a government-run commission called the Bilingualism and Biculturalism Commission, which came to the conclusion that you had to protect French language and culture and French rights in areas where French people were the majority, in Quebec and certain parts of Eastern Canada, in New Brunswick, Acadia, and so on, right? Mm-hmm. Pierre Trudeau didn't like that idea, but wanted to do something to deal with the problem and came up with a very, very truncated idea of bilingualism, not biculturalism, but simply an idea that you would be free to speak English or French mm-hmm. in your dealings with the government throughout Canada, and that you'd have education rights to educate your children in French or English where there were sufficient numbers in the area. But that's it, a very truncated form of bilingualism. And that becomes entrenched in the Charter. But it's interestingly entrenched in the Charter. It reads very, very differently from the other sections of the Charter, which deal with those kinds of freedoms we already thought we had. So, for example, Section 2 of the Charter says everyone has fundamental freedoms, conscience and religion, freedom of thought, freedom of peaceful assembly, freedom of association, and so on. But also there are the rights to be secure against unreasonable search and seizure, not to be arbitrarily imprisoned, and so on. Again, these are not completely new rights. Nobody thought that the police had the right to come and arrest you and walk into your house and smash up the furniture because they didn't like the fact you were wearing faded jeans or something stupid like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But those sections of the Charter which deal with language, the official languages of Canada, sections 16 through 24 of the Charter, read much more like a code, like the tax code. You must do this, you must do that. Whereas the other rights, the general rights that we all think we have, the right to freedom of speech, it's just written like that. They're very general, and they're also subject to a clause which states, and it's the first clause in the Charter, that these rights and freedoms are subject to reasonable limits prescribed by law. So you may have the freedom of peaceful assembly, but that may be restricted, and these things are now before the court, by such things as the bubble laws, which say you can't freely assemble outside of a place of worship. Or, mm-hmm. frankly, the abortion clinic legislation, which says you can't freely assemble within a certain distance of an abortion clinic if you're opposing abortion, for example. So these things are subject to those kinds of restrictions, but the language rights sections are different. And what the Charter also has, and is again not subject to the reasonable restrictions clause, is section 33, which is a very simple section. It says Parliament, or a provincial legislature, may declare an act of the Parliament legislature to operate notwithstanding a provision in those particular sections of the Charter, that is, freedom of speech, the right to be free from unlawful seizure, and so on. And that was part of something quite essential to the Charter, because it was a kind of a safety valve for Quebec. The other thing to know is that when the Charter was agreed upon by the provinces, it was not agreed upon by Quebec, and Quebec has never, ever signed on to it. So from its inception, the Quebec government has invoked this notwithstanding clause, section 33, in passing various pieces of legislation, including the famous language rights legislation, mm-hmm. and later on the legislation governing the use of English language in signs in Quebec. Now, in order to do that, the Quebec government, whether or not it was a sovereigntist government or a liberal government under Robert Bourassa, always made use of the notwithstanding provision.
So, for example, every party in Quebec has that view.
Absolutely. So, for example, in the case of the language signs, that went up to the Supreme Court of Canada in a case called Ford in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court of Canada at that time said, well, they use the notwithstanding clause. It's their law to make. And again, going back to my first point, it is an exercise of parliamentary sovereignty, and Section 33 allows Parliament to be sovereign. It doesn't speak to the content of legislation by provincial parliaments. That content may be, from your point of view, my point of view, the public point of view, good, bad, or ugly, but it is the law of Parliament, and it remains a parliamentary law until either the Section 33 is revoked, or the government is changed in an electoral process, or the Act becomes amended, or so on. So, what this case is fundamentally about is Quebec's sovereign right, not just as a non-signatory to the Charter, but its sovereign right under the Charter to use Section 33. And while the argument is that this law is offensive to various equality rights, and so those equality rights are protected by the Charter, albeit, as I said earlier, they don't have complete protection under the Charter. The argument is, well, they can't offend the Charter. But the problem for the argument is that the use of the notwithstanding clause is part of the Charter. So it's difficult to argue that you're offending the Charter by using a section of the Charter.
Yeah. By the way, this is all rooted in a problem that the media never helps us out with, that Quebec is a nation and was recognized, Parliament actually unanimously said it was, but our history is that we had two powers struggling for power, the British Empire and the French, and they had a war, and then they part of the problem, part of the result of the war was that the British, while they won, they inherited a population of French, and that they, in order to have a workable government, they acknowledged and signed on to rights for Quebec. It was a recognition that Quebec is not just like another English-speaking province. It happens to be a French nation, right? And
yeah,
and
I mean,
this has been the rubbing point where the tendency here is to say, no, it's just another province. It's not just another province. It's a nation, actually.
Yes. I mean, Quebec, I mean, I don't know that it's even well recognized in English Canada, but Quebec doesn't have the same procedural system of law as we do. They operate under a civil law system, much like the system in France or Italy or across Europe, not the same English common law system. So it's always had that distinction. The majority of people there do speak French. The religious culture is quite different there from in English Canada. It's mainly Catholic as opposed to Protestant and so on. But it just in accordance with what you're saying, and you'd invited me to quote from the late great Professor Mandel, who did unbelievable work in this. And if you were to simply Google his name and see the amount of essays, newspaper articles, and so on, books that he wrote on this subject, it's astounding and very, very currently have immediate currency. They're not out of date. So
yeah.
Let me just read you this couple of sentences from his book. He says this: it's enough to know that from very early on, Trudeau, and we're talking about Pierre Trudeau here, felt that bilingualism was unattainable without the constitutional entrenchment of specific French-English minority language and language of education rights throughout the country. Trudeau believed that the attachment of the popular and increasingly irresistible idea of a general constitutional bill of rights to any amending proposal would immeasurably enhance the chances of success, and tucked away somewhere in the general bill of rights would be the key to the whole enterprise, entrenched minority language rights. And the point here is that although if you read the charter about these wonderful rights of free expression, so on, we have, subject to reasonable limitations, tucked away in there is this, as I described earlier, kind of rigid code which talks about bilingualism and so on. So it looked to Michael Mandel, much looked, like the rest of the charter was kind of balls of cotton wool protecting what was the essence of the bilingualism mission. And as you said, it transformed, really in accordance with a lot of views in English Canada, it transformed the French-speaking people of Quebec from members, at least optically, not in fact, optically, from transform them from people who are citizens of a French nation in Canada to simply minority speakers, rather like Italians in Toronto or people who speak Hindi or something like that. They're just another minority, and their particular rights and their connection to the land in Quebec becomes virtually irrelevant because anywhere in Canada could approach the courts in English or French and could educate their kids in English or French if the numbers warranted. And it's a million miles away from the bilingualism and biculturalism initiative, which yeah. wanted to recognize French culture and language.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the problematic for French Quebec is that they have a long memory. I mean, between for 30 odd years until close to the end of the World War II, French was banned as a school language of instruction. Mm. So Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau, accomplished a number of things to at least optically assuage some of the problems Quebec was facing, but they hadn't been facing since 1944, plus create a new kind of political view of Quebec in throughout Canada, which was just purely performative and functional.
Yeah. Now, thank you very much for that. There's one curious twist that happened during the discussion of this, where there was a type of, I guess the court held a hearing, a public hearing for some days, I guess. But someone arguing on the, I don't know, was it the government side made the argument that if we allowed this notwithstanding clause, you might have a situation where they would decide that slavery was okay, and they made that argument, did they not?
Yeah, the government, at least is quoted in a journal called The Duty, said that allowing this. The enactment of Bill 21 in Quebec would come back to the courts in case of a tyrannical government or law legalizing slavery. And again, the ironic part of that, and Robin Philpott, who's been a frequent guest on your show, the publisher of Baranka Books, wrote an article called I have to say in French, I'm not quite sure how to translate it, Vaudeville Sinister devant le Cour Supreme de Canada, as basically a sinister play, vaudeville, before the Supreme Court of Canada, assuming this might have been part of the government argument. At the same time, Canada abstained, was one of the few countries in the world to have abstained from a motion by the government of Ghana condemning slavery as a crime against humanity before the United Nations. Overwhelming number of nations in the world voted for. Three voted against, by the way, which I believe is United States, Argentina, and Israel. But Canada was among a minority, larger than those three, but still a minority, who abstained. And it's impossible to understand why they abstained. Abstained from a motion condemning actual slavery while suggesting that the Quebec government was promoting slavery in some way.
If they had only known on that day, someone could have said, well, you don't actually care about the subject. Well, so why are you raise it? You actually abstain on a vote condemning slavery at the United Nations?
That should have brought the house down. As I understand, the argument is finished at the Supreme Court of Canada. We're waiting for them to do whatever they're going to do. There was something like, looks to me like 30 plus intervenors who all jumped in on the case. And they were trying to make a rather peculiar procedural legal argument, which is that you can't invoke the notwithstanding clause, Section 33 of the Charter, before enacting a law. You'd have to do it afterwards, which seems entirely bizarre. And it isn't what happened, by the way, or what has happened to date. So should the Supreme Court rule in favor of that, it would lead us into a very peculiar place where the government would have to, the government of Quebec, I assume, would be taking a bill which it would affix a notwithstanding clause to, but not be able to say not with this, evoke the notwithstanding clause until the bill is actually passed by a majority in Parliament. And if you know the passage of bills through Parliament, that could that delay and that problem could create problems in enacting such a law. It's a very peculiar reading. It's not a reading that the Quebec government and which was the lawyers for the Quebec government certainly said, look, this isn't about anything about the substance of the law. It's just about the fact that this this clause, notwithstanding clause, is a cornerstone of Canadian federalism, which balances sovereignty, legislative sovereignty, with constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. And it's a temporary override, by the way. It only lasts 5 years unless renewed. But the Quebec government says, correctly, the clause was crucial in enabling the adoption of the Canadian Charter, which might otherwise have been blocked. And I think it was the Premier of Alberta, Peter Lougheed, who insisted on it. The other provinces wanted it because they could see the disaster that would happen if you imposed this constitution on Quebec without the escape valve. And yeah. Certainly, from the point of view of federalists, it would have greatly enhanced the sovereigntist movement, who would see no escape valve at all. But there you go. Sorry, finish my point on that. So the peculiarity of saying, well, you can't invoke the law until you actually enact the law in the legislation, runs afoul of all that. And we'll see what the Supreme Court does. And the only other thing they want is they say, well, if the government of Quebec can do it, we want a declaration from the Supreme Court of Canada just saying, well, you can do it, but it's really bad. Yeah. Again, either of these outcomes, I think, would reignite sovereignism in Quebec. Mm-hmm. It would seem to be most unhelpful to the federalist enterprise.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that. I think it's very important we talk about it, because I assume you can't depoliticize any subject. And judging by the coverage of it, I get the impression that it'll be used by one party or another to try to create havoc in any coming election, which I think people kind of sense might happen if they can get the grip on the majority.
Yeah, we go back to the title of Michael Mandel's books, and I have to say his colleague Harry Glasbeek has also written about this. The title is The Charter Rights and the Legalization of Politics in Canada. So no longer politics left.
The legalization of politics in Canada, is that it?
The Charter of Rights and the legalization of politics in Canada.
Perfect.
So what the Charter does is allow the Supreme Court of Canada, or the courts anyway, to weigh in on political things. And do we allow...
to become politicians.
Yeah, do we allow, for example, assisted dying? What do we say about this or that or the other social problems? And you can see immediately the problem with this because, for example, just take the assisted dying case. The Supreme Court ruled in the Rodriguez case that it was unconstitutional, and then they reversed themselves some decades later. So we don't really want the courts to be simply political bellwethers.
Or merely political.
Or purely political bellwethers. So we want the courts to enforce laws passed by parliaments rather than to sit in judgment of those laws.
Yeah. I think that's a nice summary. David, we thank you very, very much. And we're, of course, always glad to be citing the great Michael Mandel. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And Pedro has a little entertainment for us, and we'll be back to talk about a few matters.